Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time once again for Second Helping, a show dedicated to the most dominant league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. Travis Ryer alongside my co-host and great, great friend, Mr. Brent Beard, who just in the last few days has added to those grandfather duties he already previously held, but congratulations on tap for Brent Beard, his daughter Lori Beth, the entire Beard family. Just a great, great thing, right? When you add to those grandkids.
It is. Glad to be on with you and glad to be a lot more settled than it was a week ago. but yes, my youngest daughters had a new, their first child, a grandson. So that is certainly exciting. So we are, and they're doing a good job already of parenting. I don't know how much sleeping they're getting, but they've got a plan for everything. But just grateful that he was healthy and had a chance to be with them, and glad to be back here this week with you and obviously with Travis and I, family is first. And has always been so, but we will certainly have our share of podcasts going on over the next few weeks. And what a great week this is, Trav, with we're on the eve of Sweet 16 and we're still got spring practice going on. So it's a great time of year.
Busy, busy time for the Beard family. And as you alluded to, Brent, a busy, busy time in Southeastern Conference athletics, really. It's that sort of intersection that we've talked about in the past when you get winter sports crossing over into spring sports, and then you throw football, spring football into the mix. It truly is a little bit of everything right now. But we're going to get things going live, by the way, on this Wednesday night. So if you'd like to jump in the comments in the show chat, we would love to hear from you right here on Second Helping. But Brent, I'm going to go ahead and refer to it instead of the Sweet 16. I'm just going to call it the SEC 16. How about that?
Yeah.
Because I know the SEC detractors, they just, boy, that pains them to see the record.
Yeah.
Record 7 SEC teams in the Sweet 16 for the men's NCAA basketball tournament. And look, you know, after the first four, after the first round of NCAA tournament play, some of those folks were having some fun.
You know,
it looked like maybe the SEC was gonna fizzle a little bit in this tournament. Boy, in the round of 32, the league turns it on, flexes that muscle, goes 7-1. 7 SEC teams coming up in the next two nights of the Sweet 16.
Yeah, 15-7 overall. The next best is the Big Ten at 12-2. Oh, there's no doubt the national media had the SEC buried and dead like last Friday, ridiculing their record at that point, and the Big Ten was 10-0. I mean, give them credit, but they've come back down to earth a little bit too. So just really incredible performances, incredible games that are coming up in the league, and still may have what, Trav, half for the teams in the Elite Eight before it's over, if not more. We'd be remiss to say, and we won't go into this in detail, but the basketball transfer portal is open as of Monday.
Wow.
900 players as of day two. Now, look, I won't get into a rant about this, but the timing on this is abysmal. Yeah. I mean, you've got your Trav, you've got your shiny object that is pure gold in the tournament, and the last thing you want leading up until the Sweet 16 beginning is every third tweet on Twitter has something to do with someone in the transfer portal. So they've got to get some logic to that and get that portal out of this time period.
It is. It's amazing, especially when you got teams that are still in it with players that are hitting the transfer portal. And we even saw some of that in the college football playoff. We knew that some of those
We
guys
did.
were going to hang around through the playoff. But it is. It's pretty wild. I think fans are almost becoming desensitized to it. You know,
Probably.
The first year
Probably.
Or so, you would have these tweets, 900 players now in the portal, 1,200
Yeah.
players, and it was astounding. But
Yeah.
I think it's just become the norm now in collegiate athletics that the basic fan is like, oh, well, that's just where we're at. And maybe it isn't as attention grabbing as it once was. But no doubt, it's amazing that with your postseasons supposedly out in front, you've got this situation ongoing in, say, football and now basketball. And
right.
we say all that. You know, we heard from so many people with this NIL and with this transfer portal, I'm done. And then you see what the first weekend of the NCAA tournament drew in terms of television viewers.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently an all-time high.
Right.
So, look, some of you people out there, you're fibbing. You're fibbing when you say you don't watch anymore, because a lot of people are still watching.
Well, they certainly watch the uniforms, if nothing else, and the lettering on the back of the uniform is quite important to them too. So you get a little bit, and I won't belabor the point with this, there are no real Cinderellas in the Sweet 16 is what you're hearing.
I love it. I don't want Cinderellas in my Sweet 16.
Yeah. Trent.
Everybody loves Cinderellas until you get to the 16, and then you've got, you know, St. Peter's against Duke or something, you know, in the 16 game. It's like, well, that don't even need to really watch it. Now, I get it. Before you start jumping into the comments, you jump into the YouTube comments, and you give me that once every five or 6 years. You give me Butler. You know, you give me a couple of years ago, San Diego State, Florida Atlantic. Okay. But I like it. I like that we're P4'd up in the Sweet 16. I love it.
Yeah, I do too. And that was going to be my comment too. It's not affecting the quality of play by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, and to go along with that, Trav, I really don't think at this point, maybe at some point, but now, you know, the question remains, well, do we need to expand the tournament, or really what they're saying is, do we need two more play-in games?
Yeah.
And I frankly think that the answer right now is no to that.
I don't think we do. Just call me, give me chalk, Chad. I want chalk. Give me chalk. Give me all the chalk. I love it. I love the matchups we have coming up in the next couple of nights in the Sweet 16. And with that, Brent, let's get into it from the SEC perspective.
Yes.
Cranking up on Thursday evening. That's tomorrow night. The Alabama Crimson Tide for the SEC going to get things going against a really, really offensive dynamic type of team in BYU. Mark Pope left BYU to go to Kentucky. It worked out for both. BYU here in the Sweet 16, Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Heck, even Cal going from Kentucky to Arkansas in the Sweet 16. So it kind of worked out for everyone involved, it looks like. But the Crimson Tide, coming off a sluggish performance in round one in a win over Robert Morris, looked more like the team you expect to see this time of year in that round of 32 win over a solid, solid St. Mary's club.
Yeah, I tell you what, and they're having some guys step up, aren't they, Trav?
Yeah.
Cliff Amari, I think, really has done so. The big center transferred from Rutgers, 27 and 15 and 4 blocks in the last two games, for instance. Now, obviously, Mark Sears needs to get his three-point shot going a little bit better during this time. Chris Youngblood, I think, got rid of his glasses or his goggles, so he said he's playing a little bit better also. Now, this should be and could be very much an offensive explosion. A lot of people expecting, Travis score in the 80s or maybe even the 90s.
Yeah, both these teams score 80-plus. So
they do. Yep. Absolutely. So I think this is a game Bama can win. I think suddenly they're playing. I think their defense is better. You hear from the pundits that BYU plays no defense at all. But still, this would be a high scoring, exciting game before it's over. And Bama will have their shot. We think at Duke or against Duke. So that's going to be fascinating. We won't get too far ahead of ourselves. But look, Nate Oates has played the schedule. That's the toughest in the nation. And now Travis about to, I think, pay off for this basketball team in Tuscaloosa.
It should. I think it's just commitment to little things from Alabama at this point.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And Nate has harped on that with this team. He wasn't pleased at all with those things in the win over Robert Morris. And then in the round of 32, after pretty much challenging his team, as much as anything from a toughness perspective, which as it relates to getting on the glass, engaging the physicality that's required at this point of the tournament to continue to advance. BYU can get on the offensive glass. They will try to go do that. Alabama at times has struggled, even with Amori, even with Grant Nelson, even with Aiden Sherrill. So they need that same level of engagement. And you would think once you get to the 16, you shouldn't even have to talk about that, especially with a pretty veteran club. Grant Nelson, huge last year in the tournament. Jaron Stevenson, huge last year in the tournament. Mark Sears, you're first team All-American. This is where you pick up your team if you have to, and you continue to carry it at least to the eight, perhaps on to the final four, but certainly a winnable game for Alabama. That's a 7:09 Eastern tip Thursday night from Newark. That game will air on CBS. A little bit later tomorrow evening, the Florida Gators in that West region as the one seed take on the four-seeded Maryland Terrapins, who won an absolute classic at the buzzer to get to the Sweet 16. Florida survived UConn, and I've heard some maybe talk about Florida. Well, maybe Florida isn't exactly who we thought they were coming into this tournament, but I tend to lean more, Brent, to did you really think it would be easy to knock out the two-time defending national champion? Did you think UConn, that proud of a program from that proud of a league, would just roll over in the round of 32? I think in the end, that can prove to have been a very, very good situation for Florida to go ahead and get that kind of test in the 32.
Right.
Not that it hadn't been battle tested coming from the SEC, but you've heard it so many times. That's the kind of game you're going to have on your way to just getting to a Final Four.
Oh,
and Florida certainly had that with UConn.
Yeah, they really did. I still think Florida wins the national championship. I think Florida and Duke may be the two best teams at this point. That's going to be interesting to see. But no, I'm with you. I think Florida just got better, and everybody has to have one of those games. And they came in clutch at the end, particularly Walter Clayton Jr., didn't he, Trav?
He did what a first-team All-American is supposed to do.
That he really did.
When the stakes were at their highest, he absolutely delivered. Now, the beauty of this Florida team is they can go extended stretches without Walter Clayton Jr. being that guy. They got other guys. But when they really needed it late, Clayton was a first-team All-American.
Oh, yeah. And listen, this is one of those Travis Reier hidden stats that really come to fruition that you win the game. Florida had 12 turnovers, Trav, to UConn 6, and those 12 turnovers, they only scored 4 points. Points, Trav, off those 12 turnovers. Florida scored 10 off of UConn's 6. You know, those are the little hidden things in basketball that may have won them the game.
Yeah, and as much as we talk about Florida offensively and how great they are, and they are, you talk about efficiency on offense, that's the team. They have made big strides on the defensive end. And if they are going to win the national championship, that will have as much to do with it than what you kind of expected this team to have on the offensive end of the four. So Florida and Maryland, 7:39 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night. That game on TBS. Duke, Arizona, Alabama will get the winner of that game. We won't talk much about Duke and Arizona. But I will say this about Duke.
Mm-hmm.
A month ago or so, I felt like Duke was kind of a paper Final Four team.
Yeah.
Changing my tune on that a little bit, because mm-hmm. it's not just Flag and four other guys, or yeah. Flag and five yeah. or six other guys. That is a legit basketball team. They have the needed pieces. They have guys that complement each other well. They obviously have an absolute superstar in Flag.
Mm-hmm.
But that's as good a Duke team as I've seen in probably 10 years or so.
Yeah, yeah.
As it moves into the Sweet 16 and takes on an Arizona team that's led by Jaden Bradley, a former yeah. Alabama point guard.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm with you. I think Duke right now has matured into the team that we thought they would be. Duke beat Auburn early on. People made fun of Duke's schedule to a degree.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm with you. Look, this is I still think they're one of the two best teams in the country, and what they're able to do still. As long as you and I have been working together, the main thing we see when you get down to cases, whether it's in football or basketball, is how well can you rebound and play defense, and particularly get offensive rebounds and have the turnover ratio situation. And Duke fits all those categories.
They do. Late game, another one of those on Thursday night. This one back out in the West region, Texas Tech taking on Arkansas. How about Cal in the round of 32?
Really?
Sending Rick Pitino to the in leading his team to the Sweet 16, but dispatching of Pitino, that had to feel pretty good to Cal. You know that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 There's no doubt about that. Trev, how about Arkansas, the second team in the last 20 years to reach a Sweet 16 after starting conference play 0-5?
That's unreal. Well, you knew the roster was there because lot of it, a good bit of it,
yeah.
Cal brought with him. So, but they have evolved. They got Boogie Flan back healthy at just the right time here for the postseason. But I'll tell you, Arkansas's got some toughness to them too.
They do.
And it's that time of year where you can't fake it till you make it in terms
right,
of toughness.
Right.
That's your biggest concern. That's my biggest concern for Alabama. Are they really that team deep down when it comes yeah. to straining when things are their most difficult? And right. being able to come through in those situations. Arkansas right now, they're showing me they have the requisite mm-hmm. toughness, and confidence-wise has to be through the roof.
Well, and Trav, the thing with Arkansas is that they're not that deep. I mean, they basically got, eight players?
Yep.
And
I think that's the way Cal likes it, though.
That's a good point. He's done that before. You know, Boogie Flan coming back, you heard all this, he's going to mess with the chemistry and all that is not the case. But I tell you one thing Arkansas needs to do is they need to mess with JT Toppin's chemistry, the conference player of the year.
Yeah.
He's going to be a load to handle, is he not?
He is. He absolutely is. And so we move into Friday, Sweet 16 action. This in the South region, Michigan State. And what about Chris Beard paying dividends already?
Yeah.
At Ole Miss. You're an Ole Miss fan. You're really happy here of late. Indiana hired a coach not named Chris Beard, and Chris Beard's got Ole Miss into the Sweet 16 against Tom Izzo. Izzo's been here many times before. This will be a fun matchup because these are two stylistic teams that they're not all that different. And I think both pride themselves on physicality and being willing to do the dirty work and some of the little things that maybe some other teams aren't willing to do. I think this is the kind of game first to 70. If somebody gets to 70, probably feel pretty good about.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that. Now, Mississippi State struggles from three and they only shoot 31%, which is like 316 in the nation. But to your point, they have been there before. I know they've got new players, but boy, if you're ever going into battle, Izzo's one of those guys that you really want. And in their last game, Trav, they were interviewing them. They had a horrible start, as you know. They couldn't do anything at all. And that's basically what Izzo said. He said, look, there's no secret to this. We can't defend anybody. We can't guard anybody. So no wonder we're behind at this point. But
yeah, I like Chris Beard too.
I do too.
Sort of taking offense to a question he was asked about, boy, what's it like? What's it feel like to get to coach against Tom Izzo and then maybe Bruce Pearl and Auburn? And boy, Beard, he was very respectful in how he took the questioner apart, but he kind of ran down the accolades of the teams he's been a part of through the years. And good for him, because Chris Beard isn't some, Joe Palooka rolling into the Sweet 16. This guy is a legitimate high-level coach. It's going to be a fun game with Ole Miss really and will. Michigan State. That's a 7:09 tip-off on Friday night. A bloodletting matchup kind of comes to mind. And Ole Miss in that win over Iowa State in the round of 32 didn't get talked about as much, but that may have been the most impressive. To me, it was. It was the most impressive performance by an SEC team in the round of 32, because they weren't just clearly better than the higher seed.
Yeah,
Iowa State was the 3 seed.
If you watch
that game, Ole Miss was the varsity. Looking at the players on the floor, Ole Miss was clearly the better team than Iowa State. Outworked Iowa State. Very, very impressive performance for Chris Beard's team as it rolls into the Sweet 16.
And Trav, let me say this real quick to back up your point. I mean, there was all kinds of accolades for Rick Pitino having now carried 6 different teams with the NCAA tournament. Well, Chris Beard, by the way, Trav's done that with 4 teams.
And that's what I think Chris Beard's point was to the question he got about, boy, you got to be just starstruck, basically, about going against Tom Izzo and maybe Auburn. I loved how he just, again, very respectfully, kind of made his feelings known about that here a day or so ago. Hattie May checking in here in the comments. Afternoon, gentlemen. Hattie May says, hey, Hattie May, thanks for tuning in on a Wednesday night. Let's get back to the matchups. You know, they figured out a way to slow down the SEC in these
these
brackets, didn't they? Friday night in one of those two early games, 7:39 Eastern on TBS. SEC's got to lose a game in this one, because you got 2 seed in the Midwest, Tennessee, taking on Kentucky, who 3 seed Kentucky. I think Kentucky feels pretty good about this matchup after what we saw in the regular season, right?
Yeah, they've beaten Tennessee already twice, and obviously all kinds of repeat statements about how hard that is. We understand that, no doubt. But in a game like this, I still think the better defensive team probably wins. I like Tennessee in the game. Frankly, Zakai Ziegler has really played well, had a double-double early on. So I like really where they're going. Out rebounded UCLA also. But look, Trav, Kentucky people, and I've heard it from some of their beat writers, win or lose, they are thrilled with what Pope did in his first year.
With the injuries and everything else? I mean, and beat Tennessee twice?
Yeah.
That typically puts you in good stead as a Kentucky head coach. Now, look, Kentucky's a different deal. Kentucky fans are like Alabama football fans.
Yes, they
expect
are.
To just roll everybody.
Yeah.
But I wholeheartedly agree. If I told you before the season, with the exodus you had with the roster from Kentucky, with Cal moving on, look, Kentucky's still going to be a Sweet 16 team.
Yeah.
I think most Kentucky fans, if we're talking about at least some that are even just a tinge realistic in their expectations, would have absolutely been thrilled with a Sweet 16 trip. So, Yeah, Tennessee and Kentucky. I'm with you. It's hard for me to bet against Zakai Ziegler.
Yeah,
he's maybe my favorite player in all of college basketball. That's a tough little dude. He's been
through it.
He's old. And if it comes down to sort of a close game, that's the guy I want on the basketball. Kentucky, again, still not close to a whole basketball team in terms of its best scenarios in terms of personnel. So eventually that's going to catch up, I got to think. And so I'm going to go with you. I'm going Tennessee there in that round of 16 matchup with the rival Wildcats. And the other side of that, you've already lost twice to a team. Tough to beat Tennessee three times, I got to think, in a season. So in the later games on Friday night, the top-seeded Auburn Tigers in that South region going to take on fifth-seeded Michigan. The Michigan Wolverines roll into the Sweet 16. You know, I think Auburn's been kind of methodical in some ways, Brent. Yeah. They've taken care of their business. Mm-hmm. Do I think they've given me the same sort of optimism in terms of their national championship hopes as much as, say, Florida? Probably not. But as we just talked about, even Florida got put through the ringer in the 32. Right. So
sure.
Auburn in a matchup against Michigan. I like Auburn in this game. I think Michigan certainly can make it interesting. But at the end of the day, I'm going with the Tigers to get back to the eight.
I'll tell you one thing. I love Dusty May, Trav, and the job that that he has done so far. But as far as Auburn is concerned, this the Pettiford kid, the freshman guard, really stepped up for them. 16 of 23 points last weekend in the second half, which was quite impressive to say the least. Still not sure about Broome being healthy, but I think they're just playing too well. I don't know. I think they get correct me on this, but I think they could get Michigan State in the next round.
Michigan State, Ole Miss winner. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure that they can beat Michigan State. But again, Auburn with the schedule they've had, they played Duke, but they played Bama twice, on and on. They've had some issues, but Bruce Pearl really comes to the top in games like this, and I expect that to happen too.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about guard play, as we know, this time of year. I feel like with Broome and Cardwell in the post with those bigs, they're going to be in a great spot more often than not. I love Cardwell. Everybody loves Cardwell as a defender.
Yeah.
One of the best defensive players in the country, not just because of how he can protect the rim and sort of patrol the paint, but this is a guy 1 through 5. You'll watch Cardwell as a big step out on the perimeter. You get caught in switches, things like that. He can guard the basketball. He can take guard guards. So, I think Auburn's guards and what they're able to get out of them is pretty much going to tell you the tale, because I think Broome's pretty much you're going to get what you're going to get from him as a National Player of the Year candidate. So we look at the late game on Friday night, non-SEC action, but as it relates to Tennessee and Kentucky, the winner of that will be looking at either top seed Houston or number 4 seed Purdue. Purdue earlier in the season on its home court beat the Alabama Crimson Tide. I think it was back in November. Mm-hmm. Houston hasn't had as much success against Auburn, Alabama, those kind of teams from the SEC here of late. But, another matchup that you think about the potential of, say, Tennessee and Houston. And we kind of talked about physicality and defense and, how a game might be called and how that could impact things. And, Tennessee and Houston, potential for that one in terms of the styles of the teams, kind of like what we talked about with Michigan State and Ole Miss, too.
I'll tell you what, I love Houston. I love Kevin Sampson and what he's done with that team. I mean, they will guard you getting off the bus.
Yeah.
Houston will. And Trev, you mentioned with Purdue, if I remember this right, Or in that game in Indianapolis, is that pretty close to a home game for Purdue in some ways?
Yeah, I mean, that does work out nicely, no doubt. You know, a game like, if it comes down to anyway, Houston and Texas, Houston and Tennessee, is so much about how the game's called. Because both of those teams will foul the hell out of you.
They really will.
Until the refs or the crew shows they're going to call stuff.
Yeah.
And if it's a happy whistle type of game, if we get Houston and Tennessee, boy, you could have 30 plus free throws easily per team. So
easily.
There you go. There's your Sweet 16 preview. Certainly sets up, Brent, potentially anyway, for the SEC to have what? I mean, you got teams in every region. Yeah. You could still have all four get there. And I guess there's a possibility where Alabama and Auburn could play for the national championship. And you could have like Alabama, Tennessee, I want to say, in a semifinal.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. The possibilities, the possibilities for that final four are something to think about. No doubt about it. Something else we want to think about, Brent, is some college football as it relates to the Southeastern Conference. Now give us an update on kind of where we're at in the schedule, spring games coming up. What's that look like?
Yeah, most of the spring games are going to be on April the 12th on that weekend. That is the weekend before Easter. So a lot of teams really want to stay off that Easter situation. The other thing that's going to be very interesting with that is, too, Trav, you've got like a lot of the SEC play on April the 12th. Well, guess what opens on the following Monday?
The portal.
It is the portal. So you've got a lot of that that's going on. Now, again, the problem is we're going to be limited in our spring games. I know some schools are still going to have some kind of I don't know if you can even call it a spring game, frankly. I really loved what Clark Lee said, Trav. He said, look, we're not going to cancel our spring game. Is that going to keep people from coming and trying to tamper with our players? I'm not coaching scared. No. And we're not going to be afraid. So we're going to have a game.
I'm on record. I haven't bought into the whole narrative of we're not playing a spring game because people are going to come raid our roster the following Monday. Heck yeah, there's the potential. But, you know, I think a lot of it goes back to guys go into the spring game kind of knowing where they're at.
Sure they do.
And a lot of decisions have already been made.
Yes.
About transferring. It's not, we played in the spring game. And don't get me wrong, there's poaching. There's no doubt about it. There's big numbers, big money being thrown around. I get all of that. But I think there's ulterior motives in play. And we talked about some of them here on the show. The fiscal responsibility to putting on, you know, an event like a spring game and the value of it truly to some of these schools where only 6,000-7,000 fans show up. Now, some places like in the SEC, I do think you have a responsibility to your fan base to provide something along those lines, even if it isn't just an outright game type of situation, even if it's shorts and shoulder pads or something,
some type of practice
even that needs to continue to happen. But we'll see how that plays out with the spring games. But let's go around the league just a little bit here on the latest edition of Second Helping. And we'll do it alphabetically. And we'll start with the Alabama Crimson Tide. I know there's a lot of talk about year two under Kalen DeBoer. You've got a quarterback situation. But defensively, we'll go there first. And when you look at the guys Alabama brings back and some of the guys that Alabama has added, that defensive line, and it's kind of been talked about for a few years now as should be a really good group. But that drumbeat seems to have increased even more going into the spring when you bring back Tim Keenan.
Yes.
And you got a budding young star like James Smith in that mix. You got LT Overton after a year in the program. Kelby Collins comes in from Florida. Edric Hill, you've got Jordan Renaud. You got, again, some young guys that a lot of people don't know about as of yet. On the hoof, again,
yeah.
This looks like it should be a real strength for this Alabama football team.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And just to be able to stop the run and get to the quarterback is going to be extremely important. To me, Overton could be the star of that bunch. Yeah. I mean, he gave us a little bit of that, did he not? Now, they've got to beef up their receiver depth a little bit, but I think they've got some real good possibilities there, especially with Isaiah Horton. I know one of the notes that came out today, Tim Simpson voted on the leadership council of the team.
You like to see that.
You do. So, and again, we don't know who the quarterback's going to be, and that's fair. But I've said this from the last few weeks. When you look at the team, the guys they brought in, the guys coming back, I'm not going to say this even yet that this is going to be a playoff team or going to win the league, but I think this Bama football team is going to be better than people think it is.
It should be. All right, just based on personnel. Now, look, we'll see after spring practice what happens exactly to that roster. But as far as the top 35 or 40 guys that you anticipate being a part of things, and there are several guys that aren't even out there this spring.
That's right.
Because of injuries or procedures that they underwent here in the offseason. But you know, I know some people will hear the Ty Simpson Leadership Council thing and say, well, yeah, I mean, but it's still important because that's a vote type of situation. Mm-hmm. And Nick Saban always talked about winning the team. And it's hard for you to win the team if you're not in a position, especially as a program veteran. Ty Simpson's been around now for a while.
Sure,
so you would hope at this point in his career, his presence, his leadership would resonate like it apparently has. Doesn't mean he's going to be the wire-to-wire starter in 2025. I think it's a real possibility. I think he's capable of that. But, some interesting stuff coming out of Tuscaloosa in that regard. Hey, let's talk about the Arkansas Razorbacks a little bit. What about depth for a team like that? Because, the transfer portal we talk about in terms of Alabama and some of these programs, it feels more like they're adding star power.
Yeah.
And what we've seen with Arkansas, it feels like anyway, is that they've lost star power over the years. Now they appeared to knock it out of the park and go into a Boise State and upgrading at quarterback a year ago. But let's say even Ole Miss, what Ole Miss has been able to get from Arkansas's roster. Where is Arkansas out at right now in that regard, Brent?
Yeah, I think they think that they are better. Now Taylor Green comes back at quarterback, which I mean, Trav, he was now he was two steps forward, one step back at times. But with Bobby Petrino, I think we know he will be better. Their secondary is one of those units that they think they've got at least four guys back there, Larry Worth, Quintavious Scandrett, Caleb Wooden, and Miguel Mitchell. And it will be interesting how spring goes with that. What's got my attention for them would be at running back. Braylon Russell, they really like.
Yeah.
And he could be a real problem. Mike Washington's another guy. A.J. Green is one that is kind of a role player. And then you've got Rodney Hill also. So, boy, how much trouble that helped this team and Taylor Green if they could run the ball better.
Yeah, I thought they ran the ball pretty well last year. And Bobby Petrino, for everything we've said about the guy and some of the fun that a lot of folks have had at his tumultuous professional career, that's big for Arkansas to have him back, especially to team with Taylen Green and continue to work with him through his development. I think Bobby Petrino, again, for everything, all the fodder he has provided, he's worth at least a win to Arkansas, maybe two.
No doubt.
When you think about what the alternatives might be at that offensive coordinator spot. What about the Auburn Tigers and that quarterback situation, Brent? What do we know? What are we hearing in that regard?
Yeah, and matter of fact, they just started this week. I mean, they're one of the more the teams that started later than anybody. Jackson Arnold, obviously, is the guy that they're looking at. I think they'll be fine at wide receiver with Cam Coleman, Malcolm Simmons, Sam Turner. Those are some of the names that have kind of been mentioned. I still think the best thing Auburn did was go out and get two tackles on that offensive line. I think they needed that, Trav, as badly, frankly, as they did anything really. I mean, I think they'll be okay. I'm not overly impressed with Jackson Arnold. I think he'll be okay. Now they've got, obviously, like Alabama does and some others, a really promising freshman coming in who had committed to Notre Dame and then went to Auburn. But still, no doubt. But still, this Auburn team is going to be interesting again. If people miss this, Auburn starts the season at Baylor on Friday night this year.
Yep, they do. I've said it before. Maybe Jackson Arnold can Bo Wallace that thing up. You know, Bo Wallace, and
it's a good analogy.
Ole Miss, you know, kind of run that offense that way for the Auburn Tigers. Mm-hmm. And Auburn certainly has weaponry on the outside with those young receivers. I'm interested to see how replacing Jarquez Hunter goes at the running back position. But the Auburn Tigers trying to get that program back to where it's been in previous years, not that long ago. What about the Florida Gators, Brent? It looks like that offensive line. It seemed like you and I, in doing this show for years, every year for about 7 or 8 years, it felt like we were talking about, boy, if Florida could just get this offensive line figured out.
Absolutely.
That seldom was even close to being the case in some of those struggles for those Florida teams. But it does look like going into 2025, with Jake Slaughter back as an All-American at the center position, some other starters returning. I know we're going to talk so much about DJ Lagway, Jaden Ball, the running backs, the run game, because that's really where it starts for Billy Napier. Mm-hmm. But, boy, that offensive line, as much as anything, has a chance to not only be the identity for that offense, but maybe for this football team in general.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And with four starters coming back, that is huge. To say the least. Obviously, as you mentioned, they've got their quarterback, that they've got good young running backs. Now, Trav, are they where they need to be? A wide receiver, Elijah Badger, gone. If these guys can stay healthy, Eugene Wilson has a lot of promise. They did get a transfer.
They killed it in recruiting at that position. They've got some legit big timers coming in, right? At wide receiver.
No doubt. No, and listen, what's going to help them is they've got two very winnable games to start the season. They're not starting with Miami like they did last year. So I think that will help this bunch. It probably will make Pop sleep a little bit better. Starting off 2-0,
and I think Trey Wilson, Eugene Wilson III, if he can have a, you know, end to end run, start to finish, where he can stay healthy, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say he can be Percy Harvin like for the Gators, but certainly from a playmaking perspective, they could really use that type.
They really could
of stretch from him in 2025. And J. Michael Sturdivant comes in from UCLA, so they have worked the portal. But, boy, Vernell Brown, the third, you talk about a legacy guy for Florida football and playmaking ability. He's certainly going to bring that to the table as well. So let's talk about the Georgia Bulldogs, man. And I don't like joking about it because it's a very, very serious issue.
Right.
But at what point, Brent? With this speeding and reckless driving, and it appears as if Kirby's maybe taking it to another level in terms of how he's going to deal with this from a public perspective. because kind of like Nick Saban, you really wouldn't hear much about guys being suspended at Alabama.
Yeah.
But with Marquise Easley now, with Nitro Tuggle now, Kirby is pretty much laying it out there that guys are being suspended from all team activities.
Yeah, it definitely is the key term. I mean, there are a lot of op ads I've seen this week. You probably have too, that Kirby really has got to kick these guys off, regardless of who they are, that they're at that point.
It's amazing at this point how this continues to be. I mean, we're more than 2 years removed from a recruiting staffer and a player losing their lives.
That's right.
This stuff that involved former Georgia defensive tackle Jalen Carter as well. And it doesn't seem like it's slowing down at all.
No, it really
isn't. No pun intended either. I mean,
Well, and Trev, from what we saw in reports today, and Kirby talked to the media, and he didn't say this, but the reports had Tuggle going like 107. So,
have you ever been to Athens on some of the roads around there? And seriously,
yeah, that's a good point.
You try to think about. I've been to Athens many times, and I think about some of the roads around there, and think about where would I try to drive 107 miles an hour?
Not really.
Now, I know there's some four lane, in there, but it's just bewildering at this point,
Oh, yeah. It really is. Now, as far as on the field, I'll hit some things real quick. Kirby talked to the media, said they want to run, stop the run. They only ran for 125 yards last year, which is just ungodly for them. That's 102 in the nation, frankly, even with Trevor Etienne at that point. They do like Bo Walker in that running back room. I think they're impressed with him. They're glad to have Dylan Bell back also. But look, they've got talent. We all know that. But this team has issues, Trav. They've got issues on that. And frankly, on the field, I don't think they get these issues settled until they get this offensive line put together again.
Yeah, I see where they added Phil Rauscher as an offensive assistant, which was pretty noteworthy because previously he was the offensive line coach for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
That's right.
So to go along with Stacey Searles, that's a pretty nice addition to be able to bring in a guy with NFL position experience as recent as a year ago to work with that group, because that's absolutely, I think, where they have to close the most ground. I know people talk about the play of the wide receivers last year. Quarterback situation's obviously concerning. But the offensive line to me, and injuries were part of that last year, that's where there was more drop-off than probably anywhere else on that football team.
No question. Yeah, and Trav, they allowed 25 sacks on the season, which is something that did not go over well either. And real quick, if people haven't heard this, Mike Bobo is back as offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach and basically everything on offense. His contract goes through 2026. So I know Georgia fans aren't enamored with Bobo, and he's a lightning rod and so forth, but that's something Kirby's not hearing about right now.
I think part of Bobo's problem, too, is he is literally a close personal friend of Kirby.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps him in a situation like that. And in terms of the noise in some of those things. So let's talk LSU. We've talked about John Emery a lot in recent years.
Yeah.
It hasn't been really for anything much on the field. Now, unfortunately, he had a season ending injury last year, and the running back, John Emery, now going to get a seventh year, but according to Brian Kelly, it will be somewhere other than with the LSU Tigers.
Yeah. That's correct. Emery went on social media and said he was coming back for a seventh year. The quote is, "We love John, but sometimes, things happen." Yeah. And we don't know where they came from. So
yeah. Roster constriction happened to John.
And look, you know, the sad thing about that is, Trav, I mean, Emory was a five-star prospect.
Big time.
Really, and injuries took its toll. It never really
academic issues.
Absolutely. But look, they still bring back maybe the best quarterback in the league when they can protect him in Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah.
And then Nick Anderson and Barry and Brown, who you and I both love,
Came
over from Kentucky.
Yeah,
they've got to redo that. Now they've really got to redo that offensive line.
That's
because
what you just hit on it. If they can protect Nussmeier,
Campbell being going to the NFL, they've got a transfer from Northwestern, Josh Thompson, too. But you know, when these narratives at LSU that we're going to hear probably ad nauseum, Trav, in the offseason is it time for Brian Kelly to start winning and winning big?
I think it is.
Yeah.
I think it may be past time. We talk about quarterback, and we probably don't talk about it enough in the departure of Brady Cook from the league and what that means for Missouri. Now, another thing we probably haven't talked about enough with Missouri offensively in recent years is that run game. They have a system in place that certainly can help protect Brady Cook's successor, but you know, it's still a newsy item when you talk about what looks to be a couple of three guys in that race. Probably the most intriguing guy for me is Sam Horn.
Because you
go back a couple of years ago, there was a lot of people who thought Sam Horn was going to beat out Brady Cook.
That's right.
Now, I think he's coming off injury now.
He is.
We saw some of Drew Pine. We've seen some of Drew Pine at about two or three stops at this point. There's another transfer in that mix as well. So what's that looking like for Mizzou here in the spring where that quarterback situation is concerned?
Eli Drinkwith is really high on this football team. I'm bullish on our ability defensively. I think we're going to have one of the best defenses that we've had since I have been here. They returned 76% of their defensive production during this time. They've got Georgia transfer Damian Wilson and Nate Johnson from Appalachian State to help them offensively, too. Bo Pribula is a transfer from Penn State at quarterback. That'll be interesting to see where that goes. But Eli pretty high on this football team, Trav.
Eli never lacks for confidence, at least outwardly anyway.
Absolutely not.
So, and again, defensively, sounds like they got a chance to be, you know, really upper echelon once again on that side of the football. We'll see with the offense and everything, especially at some of those skill spots, quarterback, running back, Luther Burden, wide receiver in general, that they've got to replace there in Como. How about Mike Gundy out there in Oklahoma suggesting that Bedlam be revived? This on the heels of we heard Prime at CU talk about playing another school in the spring game. And Mike Gundy, according to your notes, says, I think it's a great idea to play Oklahoma in the spring game. We should do a home and home with OU in the spring, maybe play twice in the spring. And Gundy says you could charge 25 ahead and they can use it for NIL. What about that, Brent?
Well, I mean, I like the idea. I like spring games and have always liked the idea of two teams playing each other. Now, Trav, we've been talking about this how long? Since you and I started working together in the early 90s. Something like that. But, I mean, there'd be a lot of hoops to go through. But the reason this eventually may work would be, again, it would be a revenue stream. And they're always looking for revenue streams. And I mean, you've got to believe, Trav, I mean, Oklahoma State, I mean, my stars, it really doesn't matter the sport. That'd be a pretty good crowd watching them play marbles.
You know what else that revenue could go towards? Coaches buyouts for both Gundy and Brent Venables after the next season.
You might need
it for both
after
2025. You could go ahead and raise that right now, maybe.
Yes.
What about the Ole Miss Rebels? Another spot where quarterback's going to be talked about. I think Ole Miss is going to be just fine.
Yes.
At quarterback. I don't worry about that with Lane and a little Weiss there. But maybe some perceptions about Ole Miss based on previous turnover.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss in the past, in the rare occasion that they did have a stout group, say, along the defensive line.
Yes.
When they a Robert Kimdichie, mm-hmm. and maybe a couple other guys would move on from Ole Miss, you kind of knew maybe those next couple of 3 years were going to be a little bit sparse in terms of big time talent. Doesn't sound like that's going to be the case with what Ole Miss has been able to continue to do, I guess, primarily in the portal, but then also in a couple of guys they're bringing back.
Well, and listen, the two things that people snicker at Lane about are defense and the running game. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you this, to his credit and this is his sixth year coming up. That's hard to believe. But give him credit for that. But Travin, his time at Ole Miss, he has proven he will run the ball, and he wants to have a really good defensive line. Now, a lot of these guys are gone. Obviously, Centurion Perkins is back. LSU transfer Deshaun Womack. Nebraska's Prince Will Yu is back. So, Pete Golick can get that team going. They're really thin in the secondary to be able to deal with that. But listen, this D-line had 52 sacks in 13 games. Trav, I don't care who you are, I like those numbers.
Yeah, that's the definition of prolific when you talk about negative yeah. play production. Let's talk about the South Carolina Gamecocks here for a second, because with Dylan Stewart coming back, that front seven, that defense is positioned to be a strength, it looks like, for the Gamecocks in 2025. Lenore Sellers back mm-hmm. at the quarterback position. But what about that, I guess, offensive line? Is that similar to LSU maybe in some ways, in which you're kind of wondering how that's going to play out for the Gamecocks?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I would agree. They don't have Vershawn Lee, their center, both starting guards, Kamar Bell and the Simpkins kid. They ran the ball well. They think Boy Stanley from Troy will help them. They got some newcomers, Nick Sharp from Wake Forest and Ronnie Newsom from Western Kentucky. So they think they will be okay there. They do think they'll be okay defensively. And obviously, and this team may be a little better, and we think it's going to be. And could they be, and we know the circumstances of why it didn't happen, and them making the playoffs, and as a Heisman voter, I think that would be a lot of Lenore Sellers noise going mm-hmm. on right before the season begins.
Yeah, it'll be interesting with Sellers if they don't have I know they've got Harbor and some of those guys, but what they're able to put around him
mm-hmm.
Because now the tape's out there. I mean, what you're getting in Lenore Sellers. Now, he's gifted in some ways that you can know, and it still doesn't matter. So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, defensively interesting with South Carolina, who appears to have done some solid work. I'll tell you one guy I like that South Carolina got from Alabama, Justin Okoronkwo, the young linebacker. I don't think Alabama likes seeing him go.
Yeah,
this dude is a thumpa, and he hails from Germany. I mean, he came over to play for Alabama. This guy will strike you. And it's interesting too, because Sean Murphy's a linebacker they added from Florida State. He got his career started at Alabama. But Okoronkwo is a guy, in my opinion, to keep an eye open for. And even if you don't have your eyes open, you might hear it when Justin Okoronkwo does his thing. He is, once he gets some things figured out, he was still sort of going through that acclimation process to football here, and certainly at a level like the Southeastern Conference, he has a chance, I think, to be a very, very impactful player for the Gamecocks. What about Tennessee? You know, because I see some of this, or I hear some of this, and it kind of is the flip what I would think it would be. You know, James Pierce moves on to the National Football League. And I read or hear that Tennessee feels good about playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. Then I hear some other things about maybe the Tennessee offense that with Nico Iamalava coming back at quarterback, you would just think that the pieces are going to be around him because guys gravitate towards playing with quarterbacks of that sort of ability. But then you hear that, well, there's concerns about playmakers on offense. So playmakers on defense, playmakers on offense, I probably would have had these flipped before I read your notes here.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. And look, I still say, Trav, that the year they had last year was predicated mostly on their defense. I thought their front seven, you mentioned Pierce a minute ago, I thought was solid throughout that time. So they've got guys coming back, Aaron Carter, linebacker, Joshua Joseph, Bryson Eason, Jackson Moy, Jermon McCoy. I mean, they've got a nucleus on that defense. I think will be pretty good. I believe it's time probably for a lot of people's minds, Nico, to really take the next step. They've kind of brought him along slowly. But yeah, playmakers are needed, or at least a mature Mike Matthews, Chris Brazel, Braylon Staley, we've heard. And another Bama guy, Trav, Amari Jefferson, they're looking to get something good out of him too.
Texas kind of reminds me of Tennessee that way as well. In some ways, because there is so much excitement about Arch.
Yes.
And jumping into that offense and teaming with Sarkisian and, you know, seeing what Arch Manning can do. But there's still a pretty good bit to replace on the offensive side of the ball for the Texas Longhorns. And then, you know, defensively, though, you look at every level of what that defense might be. And playmakers, again, up front, linebacker level in the secondary, there's some really good looking pieces there for Texas coming back in 2025.
Yeah, there really are. No doubt that the Michael Taffy and one of those guys, Anthony Hill. They really like, and listen, as prolific as Texas was at times last year on offense, they were one of the better defensive teams in the conference. And I think people forget that a little bit, and as Arch kind of takes over here and to see where this is this is going to go, and obviously, Trav, when does the hype begin, Trav, for that Ohio State game? As if it hadn't
yesterday.
Already. Really,
it's already here, no doubt about that. What about Texas A&M, Mike Elko heading into year two? A lot of reasons for optimism, I think, under his hand as they move forward there in College Station. I like Marcel Reed as a quarterback. I think there's something to that guy that to go along with just playmaking ability. I think intangibly he's a guy that you feel like you can win a lot of football games with. There's, I'm guessing, optimism about an offensive line that we've talked about in recent years hasn't been up to par. But then you think back to, you know, the style of play for this offense and what's that going to mean in terms of attracting top talent, say at wide receiver? Because we've seen some guys move on from A&M at that position here in the last few years. Now it works both ways. KC Concepcion comes in from NC State. Mario Craver comes in from Mississippi State. There's still some playmakers on the offensive side of the ball, but you know, they've got to figure out a way to get in the end zone more, I guess, when it comes to throwing the football, right?
Yeah, and I think there's a two-sided coin here. One would be what you're talking about. They really love Concepcion. They think he could be a real big playmaker for them. Terry Boosie comes back, who everybody wanted not long ago. Mike Elko, Trav, again, has not been shy or reserved about talking about getting back involved with their defense. He said at the end of the year, we literally couldn't tackle anybody. Yeah. So he has made that very clear that that group, not to ignore the offense, but the defense will certainly be improved this season.
I think the schedule caught up with A&M.
I agree with that.
You know, yes. I think there was a little bit of fool's gold going on with the Aggies, and they kind of overperformed in some ways as well. And then the schedule kind of kicked in, and it felt like with Mike Elko's team in his first year there with the Aggies. So, Brent, as we continue to move along here, the Vanderbilt Commodores, we'll wrap it up. You talked about Clark Lee earlier in the program and kind of rejecting the spring game departure that we're seeing from some other programs. And we talked about Alabama transfers in relation with some of these teams here most recently, I guess, talking about South Carolina on the defensive side of the ball. But there's another linebacker who has spent time in Tuscaloosa who could make a very, very big impact on that Vanderbilt defense.
Yeah, Canute Coy, they really like him. And they've got two other edge rushers coming back, Miles Capers and Horda Sidnor is coming back. Vandy 11th in the league in sacks last year and dead last in percentage of third down conversion. So they will be working on that. But Trev, you and I are proud to say that our favorite SEC player, Diego, at quarterback, is coming back.
Worth the price of admission. You're not going to have to watch, I think, Diego on the stream in 2025. I think he'll be on the cable.
Yeah,
they'll have him on the cable. But the league is such that you can only have so many teams on the cable.
Yep, that's right.
So these teams have got to play on the stream. Mm-hmm. So, no, Diego back. Diego changing the face of college athletics, too, with that ruling.
Really
going back to junior college eligibility and every talk about craziness. Mm-hmm. That certainly was a part of that as well. Well, Brent, as always, a lot of fun catching up. We had plenty to talk about tonight, man. We had a Sweet 16 SEC preview, and then we went around the league a little bit where the football side of things is concerned. Man, if we jumped into some baseball, we could be here. We could turn this thing into a telethon.
Board,
you know, Jerry Lewis style.
Yeah.
And kind of see where we're at.
Yeah. But no doubt. Listen, I enjoyed it as always. Certainly glad to be back. I think everybody understands sometimes we skip a week. Usually if Travis and I skip a week, it's something to do with our family. So, but we're all doing well. Glad to have a grandson, and we will look forward to next week.
Absolutely. Congratulations once again, Brent, family, Lori Beth, everybody. Boy, that's super, super news. No doubt about that. So for Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you for joining us right here for Second Helping on the Ryer on YouTube channel. And until next time, so long, everybody.